If you have not seen it in the bulletin, the sermon title this morning is Cremation versus Burial, Christian Controversy. Or as the British would so delightfully pronounce it, Christian Controversy. The first thing to say is that times have really changed. According to a recent book from the University of California Press, the first cremation in modern America took place just over 125 years ago in a small Pennsylvania town among a curious, mostly hostile crowd who made crude jokes about it to one another and to the raucous bunch of reporters who had come to watch. Some local preachers warned that cremation might somehow cancel Christian hope of being resurrected, a strangely irrational form of logic which suggests that while God can reassemble dry bones or bones turned completely to dust, ashes might pose too hard a challenge. No one, of course, raised this objection when a Christian martyr was burned at the stake or the bones of some unlucky believer were devoured in the jungle by scavengers. So the bias against cremation has been based more on local custom than on logic or divine command. Just the other day, a 90-year-old woman I know and adore was horrified to hear her biologist son-in-law say that he wished to be cremated. "Oh, my Lord," she said, "that would be like killing yourself." He could have said, "Well, not really, Opal, since I'd already be dead." But he knew what she meant, that he would be killing any hope of life after death because God doesn't do ashes. But she has spent her life in a tiny mountain village in Arkansas where cremation was only a distant rumor, so he wisely said nothing. She had no notion of how differently good people around the world have felt through the centuries about how to honor their dead, or even of how greatly opinions have changed in her own country. Since that day in Pennsylvania, after stagnating at less than 5% for nearly a century, the cremation rate in America is now about 25% nationwide, over 50% in some western states, and rising steadily. Some of you, I'm sure, grew up, as I did, in churches where no one even considered cremation or could have easily found a funeral home to provide such a service if they had considered it. I was a minister for years before I did my first memorial service for a person who had been cremated. I do them now on a fairly regular basis. Around 40% of our Canadian neighbors now choose cremation, and that is expected to pass 50% within a few more years, partly because, as is true in this country, there are increasing numbers of immigrants in Canada from other parts of the world where social and religious traditions favor cremation. Recent surveys show that more than 40% of Americans say they are likely to choose cremation for themselves, and while a majority still choose burial, not many people seem disturbed anymore by the other option. A survey 2 years ago estimated that more than 600,000 cremations were chosen in the United States, with the number projected to rise within 8 years to 1.5 million. The lowest rates of cremation, as you might expect, are in the Deep South, where fundamentalist Christians are mistakenly convinced that the Bible somewhere must have settled this matter. The Bible reflects Judeo-Christian burial customs, and is silent about countries and religions where cremation already had an ancient and honorable history, and where putting a dead body in the ground would have been unthinkable. The ancient Babylonians used both cremation and burial, and two of their crematoria have been found by archaeologists. Disposal of a body by fire goes back so far that the very word funeral comes from an old Sanskrit word of northern India that literally means smoke. Centuries later, in parts of Europe, there were urn fields to prove that cremation was fairly common among both Greeks and Romans. And although Jewish scripture never addresses this topic directly, it's obvious that ancient Israel preferred earth or cave burial. And since traditions have a way of turning into law, it's no surprise that early Christians who had converted from Judaism brought the Jewish custom into Christianity. They could also take solace from the thought that it was good to be different from the cremating Greeks and Romans, whom they looked down on as pagans. And as believers in bodily resurrection, they probably entertained the folklorish fancy I have already mentioned, that it surely had to be easier for God to reassemble a skeleton than to gather up scattered ashes. This anti-cremation stance slowly hardened into church doctrine, so that when Christianity became the official religion of the Roman Empire, burial was on its way to becoming the only method of disposing of bodies throughout Europe. By the 8th century, the Holy Roman Emperor Charlemagne called cremation a pagan practice, punishable by death. But it began to make a comeback about 1,000 years later, when an Italian in the 1870s developed the first modern cremation chamber. So a few years later, alarmed by the possibilities, the Roman Catholic Church officially banned cremation, and Catholics as recently as World War II were excommunicated for choosing it. That ban was relaxed during Vatican II, and while burial is still the Catholic Church's preference, since 1997, U.S. Catholic bishops have been given discretion to permit cremated remains at funeral masses. The 1999 scattering at sea of the ashes of John F. Kennedy Jr. has been described as the most high-profile cremation by an American Catholic ever. People who favor cremation have contrasted its sanitary mix of ash and bone fragments as opposed to moldering flesh. And as one proponent put it, nature has loaned to your soul for its time upon earth the use of the materials of which your body is made, and in return, what is your debt to nature? What else, he said, but to give it all back to the forests, the earth, the water, the air. Cremation advocates quickly caught on to the power of words, and the rhetoric of the cremation process shifted to more elegant language. The inelegant word, furnace, was dropped in favor of cremation vault, and the lowly word, ashes, became cremated remains, or in a coinage a little too cute for my own taste, were called cremains. But however we may smile at those obvious public relations ploys, the fact is that more palatable language helped people look more sympathetically at cremation. Environmental concerns have also had an impact. In Japan, where land is scarce, 80% of the dead are cremated. And in tiny England, where there has been a dramatic increase since World War II, 70% are cremated with government encouragement. In spacious, sprawling America, where space has not been an issue, that has slowly begun to change, particularly in heavily populated areas on the east and west coasts. California, you would expect this, leads the country in cremations, despite efforts by some cemeteries to sell 2-foot plots in which bodies could be buried vertically to conserve land. Family mobility has also had an impact. There can be compelling emotional reasons for wanting to go visit a physical place, touch a tombstone, read a name. But millions of Americans no longer live anywhere near where loved ones are buried and seldom return. If the grave of a loved one is close, we may visit on Memorial Day. If it's 1,000 miles distant, the visits tend to get much, much farther apart. Thomas Lynch, an interesting combination of funeral director and poet, speaks of our ever more mobile society with his usual touch of wisdom and humor. He says, "One of the obvious attractions of cremation is that it renders our dead somehow more portable, less stuck in their ways, more like us, you know, scattered." My sister and I were unusually close to each other. I was present when she was buried far too young in a Chicago suburb. She lives so vividly in my heart that after more than 25 years, I see her face and hear her voice as if it were yesterday. Those memories are not tied to that cemetery, and I've not returned to it. But I have total sympathy with people who feel otherwise and for whom pilgrimage to a place, to a historic site, to a physical site can bring a sense of consolation and peace. You have probably guessed that I came many years ago to prefer the quick work of purifying fire to slow decay in the ground, but I would not pretend for a moment that my decision was completely logical. For me, pure flame is preferable to damp, dark earth. But that preference really makes little sense because I won't know what's going on in either case. I'm also influenced by a fairly strong tendency to be claustrophobic. So despite a similar lack of logic, I like the thought of my ashes being released to blow in the wind or fertilize a flower or, better yet, feed a hungry bass on some clear lake or river. One thing is sure, no matter what our preferences may be, America is undergoing a huge change in attitude toward cremation, partly because Jessica Mitford's 1963 runaway bestseller called The American Way of Death made such devastating criticisms of overzealous salesmen in the traditional funeral business. Partly because cremation is less expensive, and partly, as I've mentioned already, because it fits so well with our highly mobile society. Nearly 1,500 American crematories now provide more than 500,000 creations a year. I read just the other day that by the 90s, half of the new arrivals at Arlington National Cemetery were cremated remains. Even many very conservative Christians who had tended to believe that there was, quote, no salvation after cremation, have changed their minds. What with the popular evangelist Billy Graham assuring them that cremation is, quote, no hindrance to the resurrection. The funeral industry itself, which on occasion had been known to call cremation advocates anti-American or even communist sympathizers, began some years ago to see marketing possibilities in cremation. Urns, they realized, could vary as wildly in price as caskets. One insider publication, making a visual pun, you have to see this and not just hear it, on a familiar stockbroker ad, told mortuaries they should make money the modern way. Earn it. The entrepreneurial spirit has made such a difference that it seemed the most natural thing in the world a few days ago when a woman from across our street walked over with two small wooden urns she was trying to choose and asked the neighborhood minister and his wife if they seemed nice enough to hold her aunt's ashes. No one thinks it's a strange thing at all to do anymore. Well, that's not quite true. Almost no one. The same change has been reflected, as I said, in the Catholic Church. The Roman Inquisition declared back in 1886 that Catholics who cooperated in cremation were guilty of sin, and those prohibitions were repeated in a 1917 revision of church law. But nearly 50 years later, in June of 1964, an announcement came from Rome that canonical penalties would no longer be imposed in connection with cremation, citing such things as national customs, economics, and hygiene. According to one Vatican official, the Holy Office sent out the letter, quote, because there has been a change in attitudes toward burial and cremation all around the world. As a result, the director of one of Wichita's crematoria told me several years ago that while most cremations were being chosen then by well-to-do and well-educated liberal Protestants, 10 of his cremations in the past year had involved Catholics. Now, some very practical comments for a moment. A body does not have to be embalmed if it is cremated within 24 hours after death. Otherwise, state law requires it. I can tell you that if you feel burning is disrespectful in any way of a dead body, you have never witnessed the embalming procedure. A casket is not necessary, although that may not be pointed out to you at the time of need. A body can be cremated in a simple box of wood or cardboard, even, I am told, on nothing more sophisticated or expensive than a tray, and the ashes put in an urn, as simple or elegant as you wish. My own most intensely personal experience with cremation came when a Wichita mortuary did it for my mother some years ago. It was in the midst of a frigid winter, so I kept her ashes in a small urn until a beautiful spring day when I drove down to Oklahoma City, into the state of Oklahoma, to place them next to where the body of my father lies. My son had driven down to that little city from Oklahoma City for this goodbye to his beloved grandmother. And late in the evening, with birds singing around us in a small rural cemetery, he and I spoke of our love for her and said a simple prayer. He had never seen human ashes and wanted to, so he opened the urn. He was surprised at how clean the gray-white ashes were and deeply moved at the sight of her glasses and her watch resting on top of them. Those moments are as fragrant in my memory as anything I have ever done. Since we did not scatter her ashes, but buried them, if some child or grandchild should wish to find that place someday to touch the gravestone or put flowers beside it, they could do so. The truth, of course, is that unless we're famous, our final resting place is forgotten after the third generation passes. Once grandchildren are gone, no one comes again to meditate, to touch, to tend the flowers. That's a generalization, but it's a good one. So I have great sympathy with those who want their ashes dropped from a plane over snow-covered mountains, or scattered in the ocean, or, as is popular in England, strewn in a rose garden connected with the crematorium. A memorial plaque may then go up in the garden or on a wall, or the name may simply be registered in a book of remembrance. I find that appealing, although it profoundly disturbed a certain Mr. Philpott one day at a convention of funeral directors. "How long do you think it will be," he asked them indignantly, "before the cemeteries on this continent offer the English method of working cremated remains into the soil of a rose garden?" Frankly, that didn't disturb me in the way he had hoped. Having been a bit of a thorn most of my life, I would rather welcome the chance to blossom into a nice yellow peace rose. Mr. Philpott's views seem to be shared less and less by morticians these days, but there has been some real bitterness in the past. A little over 25 years ago, Marin County, California, home of the hot tub and the Cuisinart and lots of other remarkable things, was cremating an amazing 50% of its dead. At the time, that was extremely distressing to a magazine like Mortuary Management, which rather snappishly said, "It is only logical that the state which gave us Jerry Brown would also give us one of the most alarmingly high rates of cremation of any state in the country." You all must be too young to know who Jerry Brown is. I leave you to decide for yourselves whether that comment grew out of religious conviction or economic concern. Now, I'm too deeply bitten by the teaching bug to resist giving you one small piece of final advice. I am totally respectful of both the choices we have talked about. But I want to tell you that it is wise to know what you want before you have to make a decision quickly in a time of grief and confusion. So if what has been said this morning is helpful in that way, then I would like to hope our time has been well spent.